Hello and welcome to the Business Made Human podcast, sponsored by Investec for your business. And I think one of the most commonly used words in company results announcements over the last earnings period has been volatility. Volatility with a capital V. When Russia invaded Ukraine, I think no one knew how long the ensuing conflict would last or how deep the shock waves would be. We've got talks of rising inflation, rising interest rates, supply chain issues around the world, COVID and China's zero COVID policy. And it all makes planning and investing especially tricky. Well, helping me gain some added insight into this topic is Dhiren Man Singh, Head of Treasury Sales and Structuring at Investec, and Tertia Jacobs, who's an economist at Investec Corporate and Institutional Banking in the Treasury side.
In a world of numbers and high-powered deals, it's not uncommon to forget the human side of business. The side that's about relationships, support, and the comfort of knowing that someone has your back. At Investec, we do more than interact. We connect to build a relationship that's truly unique, through a team of specialists who make it their business to understand yours. That's business made human. Partner with Investec for your business. Investec Bank Limited, a registered credit and authorized financial services provider.
Great to have you both on the show.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, the theme that we're talking about today is volatility. And I think, you know, volatility is one of those things that is natural in markets, especially when you talk about investing in equities. Now, just recently, we've seen volatility spiking again. Perhaps we can just kick off at a base level, Tertia. When we look at global markets now, would you say they're more volatile than historical averages?
Mike, that's a very interesting question. Just to put the question into perspective, we have seen, you know, especially U.S. equity markets plummeting by 20% or so. And that's normally an indication of a bear market. It's actually more of a psychological dynamic because that tends to instill fear in people. So bear markets do happen over time. I mean, we've had like 9 bear markets, I think, since the Second World War. So volatility then plays off in that context, especially when there's very uncertain dynamics coming into the fore. And in your introduction, you alluded to some of them, you know, the Russian war in Ukraine that's creating uncertainty and the consequences that has for inflation, bringing in central bank hiking at a time when global economy is slowing down a bit.
If you look at that, clearly, Dhiren, volatility is something that one needs to manage, to navigate. What do you see as some of the contributing factors before we talk about how we should be navigating a more volatile time around the world with increased uncertainty?
And so, Mike, before I touch on the contributing factors, you know, the question that you posed to Tertia, I'd like to just talk a bit about that as well. Do we have more volatility now than previously? And I think, you know, we all suffer from recency bias where things that happened more recently feel worse than they were previously. But if you look at some of the data, certainly some of the levels of volatility have been higher than we've ever experienced in underlying asset classes. And as we all know, markets are forward-looking. So they price in their expectations of what the future is going to look like. And the future is unknown and has uncertainty. And when there are shocks to that, and the magnitude of the shocks are quite large, then you see spikes of volatility. And if you go back a few years and you look at COVID, a 1-in-100-year event, completely unknown in terms of how severe it was going to be, how long it was going to last, whether there was a cure or vaccine, if there was, how effective it was going to be, how quickly it was going to be rolled out. Then variants. So if you look at the unknowns during the period of the last 2 years, a 1-in-100-year event, it's no surprise that we've seen that amount of volatility in some of the underlying asset classes. We've seen it in commodity prices. I mean, oil was trading at minus at one stage. Who would have ever thought?
Remember those futures contracts in May, and yes. you couldn't pay people to store this stuff. And here we are with oil over $100 a barrel.
100%. So we were in unprecedented times for in certain of these asset classes. The U.S. stock market, S&P as a gauge, in 2019, during the COVID, when COVID really hit, it fell 34% in 5 weeks. It was the fastest fall in the history of the S&P. So it just reveals to you the level of volatility that we have had over this period. So in certain of the asset classes, certainly the highest we've ever seen. Having said that, You've mentioned it in your intro as well. Volatility is something that's been around forever because of the nature of the markets being forward-looking. Mm. And the future is not 100% predictable. So you've had the global financial crisis, you've had the tech stock bubble crash, you had tapering in 2013. So all these periods have produced significant volatility in the past. It just feels very volatile now because it's more recent and you've got the war in Ukraine.
Yeah, but as you said, recency bias is there, although some of the metrics do indicate that this volatility, even historically, is large. And I think I just want to add to what you've been saying about COVID. We've also had this record money printing and experiments around QE. We now have talk of quantitative tightening. And if you just look at the US, the volume of new money that's been printed just historically, and Tertia, we've not really seen this as a grand economic experiment before. I think that just adds to that uncertainty, difficult for businesses to plan into an environment like that.
I also just want to add what Darren has discussed. You know, in this backdrop with the war in Ukraine, it's a high level of uncertainty because you can't really hedge against how a war can play out. Mm. So that high level of uncertainty is also resulting in investors pulling back, and that tends to impact market liquidity. And when liquidity drops, you know, that sort of leads to even wilder swings in some of the prices.
Mm. That's when the tide moves out and you can see who's been swimming naked, as Warren Buffett liked to say. Yeah. Durant, it's not necessarily a bad thing, though, isn't volatility? There are opportunities.
Look, volatility just generally, when you're running a business, volatility is a difficult thing to navigate. Businesses are difficult to run just normally. In normal circumstances, there's lots of things to think about. And our business clients that we deal with, they understand their businesses very well. You know, they're experts in their field. And when you add volatility and this severe amounts of volatility to the underlying variables that affect their business, like interest rates, mm-hmm. currency, commodities, be it energy or metals, it makes it actually very difficult to manage, just as a default position. When you say there are opportunities, volatility means prices going up and prices going down. So they could pose opportunities if you're an importer or an exporter and you want either a higher or weaker currency. It'll give you an opportunity without speculating, though. You don't, as a business, want to speculate. Mm-hmm. But it can, with a bit of patience and the right policies, hedging policies and the like, give you an opportunity to get in at levels that are more suitable for your business.
Mm, if you're thinking about restocking and acquiring inventory at a particular level, but we're not talking about Glencore here, which is definitely going to be a beneficiary of wild swings in commodity prices because it's a commodity trader. We're just talking about businesses who are looking at their supply chains and their stock levels. And that's really been a common theme in the recent earnings period we've had here in South Africa from management teams, is how difficult it's been managing inventory and hedging against this kind of risk at this time. How do you see it?
You know, it also depends whether you're a corporate or investor. Darren, you know, highlighted the pros and the cons for a business. Under these circumstances, I think they also tend to run higher cash balances because of the high level uncertainty. Because, you know, volatility is different to risk because risk deals with the underlying fundamentals. So the fundamental story is also quite challenging at the moment. For an investor, the angle is usually then, is it a long-term horizon? Because if you take a longer-term investment horizon, you can sit the volatility out, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, we also know that sometimes when you get these very high levels of volatility, there's definitely an element of fear creeping in, and that leads to, you know, quite abrupt decisions.
Yeah.
So it's best actually to be very slow in your decision-making in these times.
That's it. There is a lot of money now flowing out of equity markets into things like private equity. And I think potentially private equity slightly less volatile, slightly more patient in terms of an asset class. Is that something you're picking up, Doreen?
So the listed equities sector is sort of an indication of the risk on risk off trade in the market, the feel in the market. When there's a strain in markets, asset prices tend to be subdued. And as such, you could get opportunities in the private equity space. So the private equity theme globally around the world has actually been in quite some demand for quite a few years now. And that sector has been growing.
So, Doreen, if we look at that and we look at what you've just said about some capital flowing out of listed equity markets into private markets, where else do you see some of those safe harbors for investors during volatile times?
So I think currently we're going through high levels of volatility in the equity markets and generally all asset classes. So investors are generally quite cautious during this time. Mm. And the notion of keeping your powder dry, so sitting on cash, waiting for the volatility to spill over, for more certainty to come through in the markets before actually investing cash. The one concern about keeping your assets in cash for a long period of time, inflation has been a big concern globally, and we're in a negative real interest rate environment. So keeping cash, keeping your assets in cash for too long is actually depletive in the long term. But for now, it's almost a hold, a wait-and-see policy.
I just want to add to what Doreen has also been saying. So as the markets adjust in terms of the new news flow coming in and valuations of equity prices and bond yields also adjusting to new policies coming in, how the global economy is going to improve or develop, you will see that asset prices at some point in time will start to stabilize. It will be like a new normal. Mm. You know, during the COVID pandemic, we talked about a new normal. Mm. Now, in terms of the Russian war in Ukraine, with US monetary policy tightening, there will also be some kind of a new normal where volatility then starts to subside and the market starts looking. Mm-hmm. Now, we are discounting certain expectations now. How is that going to play out? Then there will be, again, some opportunities coming into the market.
And also equity markets, almost all equity markets around the world are trading below their 15-year PE multiples. Mm. Even the US is just about at their 15-year PE multiple.
Where historically it's been trading at quite...
Significantly higher.
Yeah, significantly higher. It was being termed expensive for the last few years.
So I wouldn't call the US equity markets cheap at this point in time, but certainly a lot less expensive as it was before. And I think that 15-year average PE is a good indicator as to where equity markets are. Also in the US, I mean, labor markets are still strong. There's two schools of thought as to whether or not the US will go into a technical recession or not. You know, some feel they will, and others feel the labor market's still strong, that the US consumer went into this period a lot stronger than, say, the European or the UK consumer. So that could prop up the US market for some time.
Mm. I think that's the million-dollar question in markets at the moment. That's so difficult to answer, to say, right, if you've got the PE of the S&P 500 coming back to its historical mean, then really the question is whether or not you see the US going into recession. Because if it does, then it probably could fall a little bit further and you continue to see that volatility. If it doesn't, and if inflation starts to roll over and interest rates don't have to be hiked as aggressively as some market participants think, then you could potentially go higher from here. So that seems to be the million-dollar question to answer for investors.
At the moment. Look, it is. I mean, inflation is the key thing to watch in the US as well as globally. The US has had the highest inflation they've experienced in 40 years. Just to give you some magnitude of the level of inflation that they experienced.
Eye of the Tiger was number one on the Billboard charts back in 1981, the last time we saw inflation at these levels. I mean, it's generational.
It is. So it is very high. So it's hopefully peaked at the last print in March of about 8.5%. It's printed lower in April of 8.3%. So it seems to be coming down. You know, everyone will watch whether that's the trend and whether inflation has rolled over. But if you look at inflation around the world, in almost every country, inflation and core inflation is significantly higher than the central bank's targets. US is at 8.3%, where their central bank targets at 2%. Europe and the UK, their central bank target is at 2%, where the inflation in the UK is expected to reach 10%. In Europe, it's around 8%. So you see that differential in it. It's a big concern for central banks because it really hits the consumer and the households in the long term, inflation. Mm-hmm. And that's why when you speak about interest rates, the US has signaled that they will be quite aggressive and front load their interest rates. So they've already increased interest rates by 75 basis points. And they have signaled that they will increase it by 50 basis points in June and another 50 basis points in July. So quite aggressive interest rates hikes. Their main concern as a result of that is certainly to curb inflation. And if inflation rolls over and there's some belief that it has peaked, we usually find that post a peak, interest rates still continue to get hiked.
Yeah, you know, markets are pendulums again, you know, and they like to be forward looking instruments, forward pricing instruments as well. And so they try and predict out into the future where those peaks are going to be. And then you start going back to your point, Tertia, to get into a more normalized environment or whatever this new normal is going to be. You know, will this zero COVID policy in China evolve? I'm hearing talk that, you know, those in the Politburo around Xi Jinping are not very happy with the state of the Chinese economy right now. We're seeing rising discontent in an economy like China. That's really rare to see because we know it is managed with a particular view of tolerance for that kind of dissent, but we are seeing it rise there. So lots of uncertainty still. Considering all of that, how should businesses be planning for volatility, responding to it, trying to mitigate some of the effects, the hedging strategies? What should businesses be doing in response?
Businesses invariably, by the very nature of just being in business, you are exposed to underlying asset classes of interest rates, currency, and commodity prices, at the very least. And it's very difficult to know how these underlying asset classes will behave going forward, especially in this heightened volatility space. We, as in the bank, we face the same issues as well. So we do a lot of scenario analysis in terms of cash flows, projections of cash flows, and shocks to these underlying asset classes and how they affect our cash flows. We work together with our clients who run businesses to do similar sort of things for their businesses in terms of scenario planning and shocking of underlyings. And we then try to determine together with our clients policies to mitigate these underlying asset classes. And that's probably the most prudent way to try to minimize the shocks that volatility poses to these businesses.
I think it makes a lot of sense. A lot of scenario planning work involved in that, Tertia.
Yes, absolutely. Because as we said earlier on, in this type of environment, you know, where there's a war is taking place, you know, food prices are escalating. We don't know for how long oil prices will remain high, because it's not just the question of the war. It's also energy security in Europe that's playing out. And they're looking for different sources. So the whole pattern of energy production in the world can change, right? Yeah. So, you know, it's not inconceivable that energy prices can stay high for longer, which also has permutations for where inflation could settle over the longer term. How easily will inflation come back to the 2% target? Or are we looking at a 4% longer run inflation? So from that perspective, I agree with Doreen. You know, scenario planning is the best. And also there's another development taking place, onshoring. Now, onshoring, you know, when you bring your plants closer to your country also has consequences, like it leads to structurally higher inflation. And that will also have to be baked into the dynamics. And then in South Africa, with the load shedding that could perhaps last a little bit longer than what we anticipated because of the shortfall in capacity, that also brings new challenges or more challenges to businesses that needs to be factored into to baseline and obviously with scenarios as well.
Yeah, that energy point is a really good one, because what we've seen because of the rise of ESG is the typical spending, capital spending cycle in energy markets where there is maybe a mismatch between supply and demand. Fossil fuel companies, oil and gas companies would then go and they drill more wells and they go and invest more in greenfields projects. And then eventually that spills over into excess supply. I know it's very tightly controlled by OPEC Plus, but then you see prices fall. And then it's a carefully choreographed capital spending cycle. I think that's largely been upended because of the talk around needing to decarbonize, a lot of shareholder activism. And so you're not seeing the levels of investment in traditional fossil fuels while we're still grappling to roll out renewables at a fast enough rate. So that really just adds to that increased volatility that we've just been talking about. And again, makes it so important. And just to wrap up on this point for businesses, and I think, Doreen, it's a great point you made, to sit down and do some scenario planning and analysis and weight the various scenarios and risk weight them and then make your decisions based on that. I think it's a very evidence-led way to approach times of increased volatility. Doreen, thank you very much. Tertia as well for your insights into this conversation. Talking volatility here on the Business Made Human podcast, sponsored by Investec for Your Business. I've been your host, Michael Avery. Subscribe for free episodes on Iono FM, Spotify, Player FM, Pocket Casts, or really wherever you choose to get your podcasts.
The views expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm and should not be taken as advice or recommendations. Investec Bank Limited, an authorized financial services provider and registered credit provider.